Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is somebody who I think the world of, Assemblymember Deborah Glick, a Democrat who represents New York's 66th Assembly District in New York City. A lifelong resident of the city, she's lived in Greenwich Village for over 40 years, a graduate of the City University of New York's Queens College. She received a Master's of Business Administration degree from Fordham University. Welcome, my friend, Deborah Glick.
Thank you so much, Alan.
It's great to have you with us and to talk to you about this because your name keeps coming up in the news now. And it's a very interesting thing. We've had Cynthia Nixon, for example, who ran against Andrew Cuomo in the primary on this program many times in the past. And then the Working Families Party nominated her. Now, without talking too much about this, I can tell you that there was some real division within the Working Families Party. There were some of the major labor leaders who had made whatever deals they have made with Andrew Cuomo. Now, not always, but now they like him and they want to replace Cynthia Nixon on the Working Families Party ballot with Andrew Cuomo, of course, who I'm sure would rather not have anybody ciphering votes off from his total. So they've come up with what we could only call a mashugana, it's a New York City word, a mashugana deal in which they're going to replace her with Cuomo on the Working Families ballot. And the technique here is so interesting that I wouldn't even try to get it right myself. So you'll tell me, right?
There is a quirk in the election law. You cannot remove somebody from a ballot after a certain period unless they die, move out of the state, or are convicted of a crime. And there is one other option, and that is to place them on another line on the ballot in a different office. And that is what I believe they are in the process of doing. And Cynthia Nixon is my constituent. She's very smart. She's lovely. But I don't believe she actually wants to serve in the assembly. This is a maneuver, and yet it will result in my having a general election against Cynthia Nixon, which was not what we had planned for this period of time. I was hoping to spend more of my time dealing with getting a Democratic state Senate, helping people running for Congress to flip the House blue. And instead, I'm going to have to focus at least some of my energy on ensuring that I'm reelected. Cynthia did very well in my district on the gubernatorial line, and there may be people who don't understand this maneuver, and we just want to make certain that they understand that she is on the ballot, but albeit not an active and interested candidate, and we are going to be trying to reach out to her campaign to get her help in making that clear to my constituents.
So I have a question. Will Cynthia Nixon now go public and say, hey, this is just so Andrew can be on the ballot, I'm getting off, and I don't want to be in the assembly? Will she say that?
Well, early in the year when the placeholder was placed on the ballot, who they have now put up for a judgeship. So it's sort of a double change, which they do with both pitchers and baseball.
Or what we used to call on the west side of Manhattan, a double-triple fake-out.
Right. So early on, this became an issue locally, and she said at that time in the papers that she's very supportive of me and she certainly wants to see me reelected. The Working Families Party has written a letter to a local paper, which they may or may not print, asserting their strong support for me. I'm leaving nothing to chance. So I'll be, you know, doing my own campaigning, sending out mailers and standing on street corners by the subway.
You know, my mom used to say to me, a great West Sider used to say to me, this is a good example of France giving away England's colonies. So So, you know, so here's the Working Families Party honchos saying, oh, well, you know, but it's going to come out of you. Let's put it this way. That's just not nice.
Well, look, you know, I've been in politics for a long time, and, you know, you think you've seen it all, but I think I've always believed that one's reelection, 90% of it is doing your job, doing it well, working hard. And I believe I have the confidence of my constituents. I just think, you know, certainly the primary electorate is a more focused and informed group of folks and pay more attention to these kind of machinations. The general election in a gubernatorial or presidential year is a much larger universe of people. And so that's what we have to be sure we reach out to ensure that they understand. I mean, when I've talked to people on the street about this, or people have asked me, they're quite clear that, you know, they're going to be supporting me. But, you know, the average voter is not paying attention. And if they voted for Cynthia once, they may be inclined to do so again without understanding that this is not necessarily what her intention was. So I'm doing what I have to do.
So, you know, I have an observation for you, Assemblywoman Deborah Glick, and that is when I was talking to the Working Families people, I suppose I'm not supposed to say the name based on our early conversation, that fella told me that this is what they were going to do because they were under tremendous pressure from Andrew Cuomo, and they wouldn't, the rank and file in that party would not name Cuomo as their candidate. They did that once before when de Blasio intervened for him. They don't like him. But some of these leaders decided who have all the money to give to the Working Families Party, you do it or else. And this guy was caught between a rock and a hard place. And basically, they outlined the strategy from the moment they put her on the ballot because they had to because their people wanted her there.
Well, you know, they face an existential threat to their established party line. They need 50,000 votes in a gubernatorial. So they have to have somebody. And Cynthia was, I think, clear from the beginning that if she didn't win the primary, she did not want to be a spoiler, nor did the Working Families Party want to be a spoiler and see any path for a Republican to become governor. And I understand that. You know, it's great to feel like collateral damage, but I'm going to ensure that the end result is that I will be taking my seat in the Assembly in January.
I get it. And, you know, I certainly love that concept of the outcome that you've just described. Nevertheless, I think it's dirty, disgusting, stupid politics. And I don't think that the people in the Working Families Party, the rank and file, are happy about this. The few that I've talked to certainly indicate that they don't like it. And I can't imagine what it's like to be in your spot. But Cynthia Nixon, it seems to me, was always a long shot. She should stay right where she is, as far as I'm concerned. And I've so said on my commentaries and again, because it's the right thing to do. And I know Mark Molinaro, who is now being beaten 2-1 in the polls, is not going to take Andrew Cuomo's governorship away from him, is he?
I think the governor is very strong. Obviously, there are places where it's not the level of his accomplishments, which I think he outlines very clearly, but rather the way he goes about doing that. You know, we got George Bush because people thought they wanted to have a beer with him. Obviously, we've learned that beer is more dangerous than I ever knew. So, you know, the likability of somebody becomes an issue when, in fact, the competence and their capacity for doing the job probably should be the first marker of whether one supports someone or not. I will just say that it was interesting to me that in my district, there are 76 registered Working Families Party people, five of whom showed up for the Working Families Party primary. So that's kind of a bitter pill or a bitter coda to the whole story that they count on, obviously, Democrats and independents, not on their own registered voters.
Just so everybody understands this, as you just mentioned it, they needed 50,000 votes to stay on the ballot, basically, the next time, and they have to win that in the gubernatorial election. So certainly the Democrats will qualify, the Republicans will qualify, and I think with Cynthia Nixon there, that would be their best bet to qualifying for those 50,000 votes, don't you?
I believe that Democratic voters will be smart, and there are, you know, obviously I'm a self-interested party in this matter. So obviously it would be easier in my life if she stayed on the Working Families Party line. I don't think it would affect the outcome of the gubernatorial election. And I think that the Working Families Party would see a reasonable vote that would keep them in business, so to speak. On the other hand, you know, there are people who say, let's leave nothing to chance. And I think they could have Andrew Cuomo turn around, have the line, and then say, don't vote for me on the Working Families Party line.
Yeah, he doesn't like them very much because he's always been an adversary. Do you think he's a bully?
I think he has an aggressive style that is single-minded towards his whatever he sees as the end result. And clearly there are times when that comes across as tough guy. And I think he likes that persona,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, he's the muscle car guy. And I have to say, when there's an emergency, that persona, whether it's a natural disaster or whatever, that persona is actually a positive thing. It's not necessarily as positive when there are delicate negotiations.
Okay, so Deborah Glick, tell us a little bit about your stomping grounds. Tell us a little about Grange Village. This is the place that historically first had the bosses like Carmine DeSapio and then Ed Koch, who morphed from a liberal into a less liberal person. And what is the tenor of the politics of Grange Village now?
Well, let me be clear. I represent the village from east to west. So it includes East Village as well as Central and West Village, all of which have separate identities.
Absolutely.
As well as NoHo, SoHo, Tribeca, and the Civic Center. So it's and Battery Park North. I don't want to insult my constituents in Battery Park City North. I think that New York, as you know, New York City is a web of neighborhoods. And people's identities are very much tied to the 20 square blocks in which they circulate. So the gestalt of the East Village is very different from that of the West Village. But I think that the politics are liberal to progressive. We have a lot of old-time residents, long-time residents. I'm one of those. We have a lot of new people. People are attracted to the culture, the creativity. We have a lot of small theaters. It's, you know, Midtown is the Broadway theater. We have a lot of off-Broadway and off-off-Broadway. We have a lot of small museums, cultural events. Those things are what attract people. We're losing our air and light by having more vertical development, but in comparison to other parts of Manhattan, we are low-rise, mixed-use, and people like that sense of walking down tree-lined streets and seeing quirky, edgy things. That is being lost by overdevelopment and homogenization, which started under Mike Bloomberg but has accelerated with the de Blasio administration.
Let me just say that I'm old now. And I used to take, when I was a young man, I used to take young friends, girls, out to Greenwich Village to have a cup of coffee, which cost then $5. And I'm wondering whether that whole ambiance is gone.
It exists in smaller pieces. The East Village is still... And we have a lot of schools. I mean, I chair higher education, and this is in many ways the epicenter of education, NYU, the New School, Cooper Union, Pace University, Borough of Manhattan Community College. It's not a physically large area, And yet we have these major, major institutions. And so we have a lot of young people who are here on a regular basis, many of whom live and want to continue to live here. So that still exists, more so to the east than the west. But, you know, escalating real estate prices have made it more challenging for small businesses. We have a lot of empty storefronts, and it's not just the rent, it's the way in which people shop now. Online shopping is a challenge for small local shops. They try to find a niche, but it is hard, and the escalating rents make that even more challenging.
So, Deborah Glick, I was going to ask you about this. You just passed over something which is one of my great peeves, and that's the concept of the empty store. Now, that exists on the West Side. It exists in the Village and Broadway, you name it. Is that all about price point? In other words, greedy landlords who want to get more and more money out of those stores, and so they leave them vacant until they get what they want? Or is it what you just mentioned, that there are other considerations?
Well, I think it's both, and it's split. Certainly, escalating rents are a real problem, and it's a problem in residential as well as commercial. That is for certain. But it's also the fact that a lot of young people have enormous student loan debt because of escalating tuition prices, and that means, you know, we have a consumer economy. And when people don't have disposable income, these kids have a mortgage on their education. They're not going to be able to get a mortgage on an apartment or a house. So it's changing what their choices are. And it's also different in terms of what kind of jobs people have. You know, half of the young people are looking for jobs in tech or in advertising that's focused more on a younger demographic, and as a result, they don't all have to buy suits and they don't all have to wear dress-up clothes. And so the shops and stores that are selling that, department stores, are struggling just as much because people aren't necessarily driven to buy the same kinds of things. And it's their idea of consumerism is experiences. So they want to go out to eat and hang with their friends, but they're not going to go to the mid-range or higher-priced restaurant. So there's a lot of disruption in the economy, and I'm sure this was true in another generation that faced a different shift in the economic interests of people. But it's very tough, and empty storefronts create a sense of depression. It creates an unsafe streetscape, let alone an unappealing visually streetscape. And that has other consequences.
Sure.
So, you know, we are in a very tough time. And, you know, the attempt to say, well, let's just keep cutting taxes, well, the result is our subway system is a mess. The streets need repaving, and there isn't the same level of support. Schools have higher numbers of students in classes than they should. So the endless let's cut taxes mantra, you know, I did a little thing in my newsletter. I should send you my newsletters about how what the taxes were in the 50s and the 70s, the 80s, and now. And there is a trajectory, a sharp trajectory down, and yet we have these infrastructure problems, we have these other overcrowded classrooms. They are the result of people thinking that you can do government on the cheap.
Okay, Deborah Glick, I should say Chairperson Glick, because you referenced just a few seconds ago that you're the chair of the Higher Education Committee. We only have 5 minutes here, but the City University of New York has been having some problems, some ethical problems and other things. You're in charge of oversight. I'm a graduate of Hunter College. You're a graduate of Queens College. We know what those universities have meant to us. Is there a political element to these universities? My sense is that Governor Cuomo has put his paw both the SUNY and CUNY operations, and it's not going well.
Well, Well, I would say that any governor has always had an outsized influence on SUNY. They appoint everybody to the board. Certainly, George Pataki appointed one of my colleagues, Bob King, who wasn't really an educator or a scientist or anything else. So there's always been that. The City University was a little less controlled by the governor in past years, and this governor certainly has put people on the board, including, in my humble opinion, inappropriately, his budget director. I don't think appointees by either a governor or a mayor should be people who work for them directly. I think that's a conflict. So that, in some ways, I think both of the systems, because of rising cost of private tuition, have actually seen a major influx of students long before there were specialized scholarship programs.
Sure.
But we have gotten an incredible chancellor at SUNY this past year. Christina Johnson is an electrical engineer with a distinguished background. Frankly, I'm shocked that we were able to attract her.
Well, does she have the guts to say no? Does she have the guts, Deborah, to say no to Cuomo if he asks for something unreasonable?
I think she is smart enough to chart a course and convince the governor of the wisdom of that that course.
Okay. So, you know, the choice, as you put it, can come down to you can pay over $60,000 a year for NYU, where I did my PhD. $60,000 a year, it seems incomprehensible, and it's not the only one. They're all up there now. Or how much does a city university cost without the special programs, an average person?
I think now that the tuition is either $6,500 or $6,700, something in that range.
So if you want to go to school, when I went to Hunter, it was free, of course, but if you want to go to school, it's a good deal.
It's an excellent deal, even though it is a struggle. But, you know, we have a great tuition assistance program for poor and working poor students that helps dramatically. And many of those students are eligible for federal Pell Grants. So I forget exactly the percentage, but it's something above 50% of the CUNY students attend without any cost of tuition.
Well, Deborah Glick, I got a minute, and it's, all I have is a minute, and that is, you know, we see our past friend, Shelley Silver, going to jail, and we see corruption. Can you offer us any insights into how that happens to somebody?
No, it is mind-boggling how some people who are seemingly very smart run into these kinds of troubles. The one thing I will say is elect more women. There seem to be a better chance of people understanding basic ethics.
I love that. So we are out of time. Our guest, and a wonderful guest indeed, has been New York State Assembly Member Deborah Glick, a Democrat who represents New York's 66th Assembly District in New York City, Greenwich Village. Assembly Member Glick, Deborah Glick, thanks so much for joining us. It's a wonder to have you with us.
Thank you, Alan, and thank you for WAMC, which is a beacon to all of us.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.